Contenders, ready! Gladiators, ready! Three, two, one!
The Gladiators!
Hello and welcome to the Guide Pod in association with Gladiators TV. I'm David Blackmore, and with me as always is Diane Udell, aka Jet, and producer Paul. Diving into the mailbag for this week, and there's a lovely email from Grace Thompson Turner. Hi, Grace. Now, Grace is closing in on her 30th birthday. Now, she has cerebral palsy and epilepsy, but says if she was a gladiator, her name would be Badger because she doesn't let anything get in her way because she's so determined. Grace, I absolutely love this, and I think Badger would be a great name for a gladiator. Paul, has there ever been a Badger?
No, there has never been a Badger in any of the international versions across the world, so it's a very unique name, Grace. The Nigerian gladiators have had a T-Rex, hippo, and my personal favourite, hot dog, but never a Badger. So yeah, it's a unique name, and also the gladiators, the Arabic gladiators have had a hyena and a bat as well, so pretty close but not quite.
T-Rex, did that person have particularly like short arm?
I was more confused with the hot dog.
Hippo. Is that someone who perhaps in another, I'm just trying to think, so I mean presumably someone it was a bit larger.
No.
What?
Oh, hippos have a big temper, so maybe it was somebody a bit like our original shadow you don't mess with. Maybe.
Okay, Paul, another strand. This is like my favourite thing on intros. I need you to find out more. I need more names for us to discuss. We should do a whole episode just on names. Oh, Di, also, Grace mentions in her email that she loved meeting you at Comic-Con in Middlesbrough. Do you know what, even for you, and I know you mentioned this a few times, but it really is so wonderful for you to just keep meeting the fans all these years on, isn't it?
It is. Oh, and hello, Grace. I do remember you, but you're right, David. The interface and the opportunity to spend not just a few minutes, but quite a few minutes with anybody who saved their pennies, have saved their albums from 20, 30 years ago, and made the effort to come across public transport or drive across the country to go and meet us. We spend the time with you. I mean, they always stick me at the end of the table because they know I spend a lot of time with people. But I love listening. I'm a counsellor, so I love listening to people. And I genuinely enjoy, as I said, getting to meet and give you a big hug as well sometimes. I enjoy that too. I think Lightning's quite similar. They always stick us towards the end of the table. Oh, those two, they're off. Well, they're still there. But you know, you do just want to spend that time with somebody who spent 30 years still holding a torch for their favourite family show.
Yeah, and Di, actually, I've never been to one of these events. Are they all roughly the same? Is it meet and greet? Is it Q&A? Presumably people bring along things to sign. Like, how does it normally work at these events?
So what you'll have is some kind of large arena space, or two or three of them booked out, but maybe like an exhibition centre. And what you'll have is not only gladiators, but you'll have other iconic shows like Doctor Who, some of the Star Wars films, Stranger Things. We've even had a group of the cast from there in most recent years. And people just queue for so long outside of these exhibition walls, and they bring whatever they've got, really. And the main thing they want is you to sign something, but have a selfie with them. And it gives you a chance to stand up and give them a big squeeze, particularly with the cold from having stood outside. And I just absolutely love them. And the thing is, you sat there signing, then you look up and there's T-Rex in front of you spitting flames. Because you just get the, what they call when they do all the dressing up to an extreme, with costumes that are often quite handmade, and they're incredible. So you've got Chewbacca in front of you, you've got a Star Trooper in front of you, and then T-Rex from Jurassic World. It's a bit surreal.
I once went to one and there was a guy who was dressed up as a cardboard wolf out of Gladiators. It was amazing. It was really good as well. It was really well done.
The talent that goes into the costume making. And I even got to sit on the back of the Batmobile. It was a replica, but I just love the Batman series. So yeah, it's great. They're great fun. If you can get the chance to go to a Comic-Con, do.
I was going to say, Paul, that should be on our list to do this year. Shouldn't we should go together? And shall we dress up?
Yeah. What would you
Should I dig out some of the costumes?
Yes. And also just reading that liner from Grace about meeting you, Di, and presumably she doesn't say, but presumably for the first time, it took me back actually to meeting you, Di, for the first time when you came on the show 2015, I want to say. Was it 2017? It would have been 2017, yeah. And I can, the thing that, you know, sometimes with memory, you can remember a specific moment, and you guys had gone to have your picture taken after being on the show, and you had to go kind of round a corner at the old This Morning Studios. And I can remember just thinking, right, that was always my time to, when you want to try and have a chat with someone or take a picture with them, that's always a time when they're having their picture taken, because they're off the show, it's all relaxed, it's all chilled. And I can remember just like how hard my heart was beating. It was like coming out, you know, the cartoons when it comes out like really far. I was like, be cool. And then when I came around the corner and I was like, you know, and I can't remember exactly what I said, but I can still visualize just coming around the corner and seeing you guys. I'm like, gosh, I'm like 5 paces away now. Then asking to have the picture with you. And was it James or was it Mickey? I can't remember who was on with you that time, but whoever the other guy was, well, you've got to have a picture of all of us. You can't just have a picture with Di. And I literally pooped my pants because I was like, here is a gladiator who is towering above me, who's saying, you know, why just pick her? You know, get a picture of all of us. And so, yeah, but the only picture I think I've ever posted was one of you and I.
I do remember it. I do remember it because This Morning has always been one of my favourite shows. I'm a psychotherapist of 20-odd years, but because I met Denise Robertson, who was one of your long-standing psychs, and she inspired me to actually want to go and train. So I've always had a real special place for your show, like you've had a special place for our show, and now you're producing with Paul the Glad Pod, which is brilliant. And our boys, the Glad Boys, are very, very fond of their memories of the show. So anyone that brings us together and allows us to breathe life back into the memories that we have of the show will always be fondly thought of and nicknamed then our Glad Fam.
And guys, email us in your memories of the first time you met Di. Amongst all the bits that we've discussed today, you can get in touch with us, as always, by emailing gladpod@gladiatorstv.com or sliding into our DMs on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. But for now, let's get on with this week's show.
3, 2, 1.
He's the man responsible for creating one of the most iconic TV theme tunes of the 90s, maybe of all time. Do you have the speed, the strength, the heart to be a winner? It's none other than music producer Muff Murfin. Muff, great to see you. Welcome to the Glad Pod.
I'm glad to be here, actually. Catch up on some memories.
I was going to say, it's been 30 years, Di, hasn't it, since you last saw Muff?
Do you know what, though? It does just actually feel like yesterday. I don't know about how you feel about that, Muff.
Well, I do. When you start talking about it all again, everything comes back and it's just like it was just a very short time ago.
Your journey into the world of music, I mean, because you've pretty much been involved in music and radio business like all your life, but originally you were a teacher, weren't you, in the 60s?
Yeah, I started off as a teacher and then I had a wonderful job in Birmingham, working for Birmingham Parks. I was the Senior Recreation and Entertainment Assistant. That was my title.
Oh, what a title that is.
I know, but I was basically responsible for all the sport and entertainment in all the parks in Birmingham, and that included like 200 football pitches, 12 golf courses, and sports I'd never played, you know, but like bowling. I had some like 20 odd bowling greens that came under my jurisdiction, and I would go around and present the prizes at all the various events and everything. So it was a great job.
So would you say that the start of your music career professionally then was when you'd kind of entered the world of radio as a DJ on BBC Radio Birmingham, which is now West Midlands, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's where it started for you.
Well, no, I was doing live gigs before that. What it was, I was playing with a band, which then sort of, it went from 5 down to 3. I was doing sessions, singing and all that sort of thing. And back before you were born, when the band stopped playing, everybody, including the band, went to the bar for a drink. And the promoter would be sort of, after 20 minutes, be pointing to his watch and bitching and moaning because no one was dancing and the bar was too overcrowded. So I had a record shop at the time. And so what I used to do, I had this little Philips, I don't know if you remember, little Philips cassette recorder. And I recorded what was the top 20 and things like that and various other records. And I would plug it into our powerful PA system. In those days, if you had a 100-watt PA system, you were important. And I used to plug into that, and all of a sudden I noticed that people started dancing. So A, the band loved it because my band were big drinkers, so they could stay drinking at the bar longer. There were no, you know, there were no sort of problems with the police for drinking in those days. And we were all happy. So I decided then that I would start doing a little DJ set, because that was just unknown, really. And so I'd have a little dance set recorder and this little Philips recorder, and I would switch from one to the other and play records or play the cassette. And then I decided, well, if I was going to DJ them, I could actually ask for more money. So I became really one of the first, you know, live presenters in the Midlands. I got friendly with a lot of Radio 1 DJs through a club I was running. So people like Roscoe, and then I bought Roscoe's twin decks off him. So... was then set, you know.
Well, and of course, your radio jingles have been played all around the world over the years. And that's really where your Gladiators journey starts, isn't it? Because it's Nigel Lithgow that hears one of your jingles on Capital Radio. And then from that moment...
No, it wasn't Nigel. It was John K. Cooper. I had a couple of hit records, and John K. Cooper actually did the video of those records for a German and French record company. And then I was at Medium, where in those days, where there were no mobile phones or anything. So you took all your wares to sell in the south of France, in Cannes. I was out selling, and my wife was on the stand, and John K. Cooper came up and said, "What's the old bugger doing nowadays? Is he still writing music?" And she said, "Well, he does a lot of jingles now." And he said, "Oh, I'm into radio, I'm into jingles, and my favourite jingles are the Capital Radio," which coincidentally I'd written. And his favourite jingle apparently was the Eye in the Sky jingle, which I did for Capital Radio. And he said, "But the snag is," he said, "I'd love to hear it, but they talk over it." Well, which is what you do with traffic jingles. So he just said to me, he said, "Listen, tell him when he's back to England to give me a call." So that's how it started off. So when I got back to England, gave John K. Cooper a call, and he said, "When can you come to London?" And I said, "Oh, look at an empty diary." I said, "Oh, I think I could probably make it tomorrow if I change a few things around," not wishing to look too keen. And so he said, "No, I mean today." Well, it was about sort of 9:30. And so I said, "Give me a couple of minutes." Once again, the diary was empty. I said, "I'll be with you 12 o'clock, a couple of hours." So I thought, at least I'm going to get his lunch at London Weekend Television. So shot off to London, and I'm sat in his big room with his secretary, and John comes rushing out about 30 minutes later. And I thought, "God, I've traveled all this way, and he's going to be late." Anyway, he came out, so I've got 5 minutes. I thought, 5 minutes? I've come from Worcester. And he said to me, "Come with me." So he played me the American Gladiators. He said, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, needs a bit of razzmatazz on it. It's a bit dull." I said, "Needs some exciting music." He said, "Exactly. You do the music in the style of those Capital Radio jingles," he said, "and I'll add the razzmatazz." So he said, I said, "Okay, how long do you, you know, when do you want it?" He said, "I want it within 2 weeks." And I went, "No problem." My little feet were pedaling away like a like a duck in a mill pond. 95.8
Traffic Update with the Flying Eye.
Something I really want to ask you, and I've been looking forward to asking you this: how did you pull together creatively? Did you write the lyrics first? Was it the rocking and the whole kind of big kind of guitar stuff that came out of your heart and creative mind at the time? How did you go about doing it?
Well, because I'd done the jingle pack at Capital Radio, and I'd obviously got a group of musicians in mind, and it was, and I put some really wailing guitars on that package, as well as some pumping, screaming brass, as I called it. But I wrote it on the plane going to Dallas. I just came up with the phrase and my little tiny sort of cassette recorder, and I wrote it on the way to Dallas, and virtually I got all the melodies and written a whole list of words, and then finished them off really in the first 24 hours I was in Dallas. You know, I just came up with the melody. What it really was, the Gladiators, that was how I started off, just like I'd normally do with the jingle.
Right.
And then just wrote it, all the words I could think, with fighting like the heart of a lion, you know, and the and all those sort of phrases on a whole list. I used to stay with a friend in Dallas called Tom Merriman, who did all my arrangements and everything for me. But because I can't play anything properly, I have to sing all the parts. So what I did was sang the melody and the song to Tom, and then he scribbled, wrote them all out on a piece of paper. And then we put the rhythm track down first, and then I came back and I sang the brass parts to Tom. Then we went back in and added all the guitar parts. An incredible guitarist in Dallas who knows the way I think. When you say, can you play like Brian May, or can you play like, you know, any famous guitar player, he can do it. And he had this little sort of pod, not, you know, which you used to flick switches, and it would give you the sound of various guitars, and another pod which gave you the sound of various amplifiers. So I sang all the parts, and then we just, you know, it was all done. That's the way I create, I suppose. And then we just, in the end, put the vocals on. And that was, and then just came, just thought up little tunes for the games, because we hadn't seen the game. So I didn't really know what the games did. And so it was a case of sort of working out a tempo that was pretty neutral and just making them sound quite exciting with, once again, the same lineup with the brass and guitars and occasionally a bit of synth. But synths hadn't really developed that much in those days. You know, they're not, you know, they weren't like they are nowadays where you can sample and do everything. Brought the whole lot back. I mixed it all in the States as well, and brought the whole lot back in the hope that they'd like it, because I'd been putted, right? but then it got very interesting, because I played it and I really liked it. And I phoned up John, and John said, oh, he said that. He said, well, I'm the executive producer. He said, I will produce the first set. He said, but I want you to meet Nigel and Kenny. He said, they're going to direct it, you know, under me. So I came down to London, and John introduced me, and I met, John introduced me to Kenny, right? And Nasty Nigel, as it became known. They looked at me. They hardly shook hands with me. And then we walked and said, well, we're going to going to a new office just down the road from London Weekend Television. And it was a glorious sunny day. They didn't speak to me at all. They didn't, you know, it was like, I thought, you know, do I smell or, you know, right? So we went down to this room, and they had this big boombox. And of course it was on a cassette, you know, in the days of cassette. So I put the cassette into the market, into the machine, and they still weren't talking to me. It was really strange. I played, I suppose, the opening 30, 40, 50 seconds, and Kenny said, it's effing marvellous, right? And and Nigel then said, I agree, he said. And they both, and so Kenny said, well, what does that mean? And he said, I just can't believe it's so good. And they both died laughing. And of course, when people laugh, you tend to smile as well, don't you? So I'm there smiling. And Kenny said to me, he said, listen, he said, we've got to apologize to you. He said, but when we heard that we got this job, he said, we're freelancers. He said, so we knew this could be the start of a fantastic career. Me, I didn't know, because as I said, I didn't really know the program. And they said that what had happened is that when John K. Cooper, the producer, has said to them, this is what I want you to do and produce this, we said to him, well, the music's important. And John said, I know, my mate's written it. And they both looked at each other and said, who's your mate? He said, it's Muff Murphin. And they went, who the F is Muff Murphin? He said, oh, he said, you'll love it. He said, when he produced it, this is before I'd written it, before they'd heard it. So they thought, oh my God, our future depends on this. What are we going to do? And so they said, we went to Queen and asked them how much they would charge us to use some of their music. £250,000. He said, well, you blown the budget, which was, like I said, was 12 grand. So they sort of laughed and said, listen, this is great. So they then played all the other tracks. And then they said, well, listen, in an hour's time, we got all the managers coming in, because this is going to be our headquarters. So he said, will you introduce it? I said, oh, no, I don't know any of these people. I don't think I could do that. So anyway, when they came in, Nigel introduced it, the music, and said, you got to listen to this, guys. At the end of it, everybody applauded. So I felt a little bit embarrassed, but that was how it started. So it didn't kick off on the best foot, but it ended up on the right foot.
I'm not gifted in terms of music or the creative arts in that sense. So I was just trying to get my head around. You're saying about, you know, getting it together in your mind on a plane. Is there a eureka moment that you have when these, because obviously you're doing it when you're on the plane, so you're probably not in the mindset of, right, I'm at work, I must come up with this. So is there a, was there a moment or a eureka moment where you're like, that's it, I've got it?
No. Well, what it is, I tend to write to order. You always dream of saying one day the tune's not going to come, or the phrase is not going to come, and you worry about that. Fortunately, with jingles, it's because they're sort of short, I find them quite easy to come up with. You know, I'm still, believe it or not, writing jingles now. It was just on the plane, I got to the stage. Remember, I'd been paid, right? So I had to produce this music, and I'd done not a lot about it. Nothing had come to mind. I've been doing, writing other jingles and working in my studio. So it wasn't until I actually got on the plane that I thought, I've got to do something about this. I can't arrive in Dallas with nothing. And so I just started, and the da 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 da, the gladiators. That's the first bit it came from. And then it was da 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 da, you know, and it slowly came. And within, I think, I suppose within 2 hours, I'd written the theme tune and put it virtually together. Just changed a few things when we started putting, you know, writing stuff and that. Do I extend this or do we extend that? And that was it. So that's the way I do everything. And I do tend to leave it to the last minute.
So some fans may not know this, but there are actually two versions of the Gladiators theme tune. So it was recorded twice by two different vocalists. And if you listen closely to the TV version versus the CD version, you might hear the differences. I didn't know this.
Well, I'll tell you how that happened. I don't know if you know, whenever you listen to two versions of a record, the first version is the one that you like the most for some obscure reason. Something the brain does. But the problem was, I thought by making this longest, because all the themes, whilst they're only 60 seconds, I wrote too many versions and wrote other words on top of them later on. And I had this session singer, which I was using quite a lot in Worcester, and I thought this could be a hit record. So I decided to re-sing it with this with the guy who was actually singing with ELO2 at the time. So what happened was that I recorded it with him, but when I took it down to Kenny and Nigel, they decided they preferred the first version.
Title song.
So that's the one we went with for TV. But I only paid for a session. The singer in Dallas had only been paid to sing a TV thing. He hadn't really been paid to do a record version. I decided to record it with this guy. And the rumor was that the guy that sang it in Dallas was a big, fat, bald-headed guy. Well, he wasn't. He was a good-looking guy, in fact, actually, you know. But because I'd only paid him to sing, I paid him cash, obviously. I'd only paid him to sing the TV version. I didn't think I had the right just to release that version as the record as well. So that's the way it became, you know, two versions.
And Muff, is that the guy in America, is that the guy who's known as Storm? On quite a lot of the Gladiator tracks, there was this person who none of us over here kind of knew who was. Well, almost sounded like a gladiator himself.
Well, the record company came up with the name Storm. You know, I didn't have a name for the band or group or anything. So they came up with that as well. That's how, you know, that's how it came to be.
I actually spoke to Phil Bates, who was the...
Phil Bates, that's right.
Yeah, like you said, the singer of the Electric Light Orchestra Part 2. He was filmed in the Gladiators music video for the theme tune. Yeah. And he was telling me some funny stories about how he wanted in the music video to have a guitar because he felt so much more comfortable holding a guitar and performing. But when Nigel, who was directing it, saw the guitar...
Ken Warwick.
When Ken Warwick saw the guitar, he was like, no guitar, take the guitar out. Quoting Phil himself, he said, as you can tell from my video performance, I was not a natural performer in front of the camera, especially without my guitar. I think the video might have worked better if I had had a guitar for me to hide behind. So it's quite an interesting story.
Actually, Phil and I did one public performance for the Gladiators for the Fate, which Jet will remember. Di, you came and opened the school Fate at King's School, which was my son's school.
That's right.
Well, I did a deal with several of the Gladiators, as well as Ulrika, to come and open my school Fates at £500 cash. Right. And thousands came, from making at the school Fate, you make £3,000-4,000. Well, we made £35,000 at that school Fate.
Wow!
Yeah, I know. All that money was taken in 10p's and or 2 shillings as well as in those days, and that, yeah, quite incredible. So, but yeah, Phil and I did one live version. I played bass guitar very badly, and Phil played guitar as well. No one's going to reproduce those solos that a guy called Bud, who played those guitar solos, because they really are quite incredible. And it's me just singing to him and then just doing little bits with Bud in Dallas. And if it had become a hit, I said to Phil, well, if it does become a hit, we'll go on the road. But it only got to number 11, I think, you know.
I think over the years, my air guitar performances along with the Gladiators theme tune is probably up there with the... I reckon I could recreate the performance.
good mind to that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've got lots of the lots of the melodies that are made into songs. You know, like there is a rap. If you can imagine me rapping, right, which I don't think anybody outside, this area has heard. But I'll make sure you actually get a copy of that.
On the TV screen, where the gladiators come on, lean and lean. Oh yeah, gladiators. Oh yeah, they're back. Here's some news that you're really gonna dig. Show's back again and it's really big. You gotta tune in for the gladiator power. Get ready for the hitless TV hour. Oh yeah, gladiators.
There are two thoughts from me, Muff. Why do you think it is so iconic and so loved? And at the time, did you think this is the best work I've ever created? Or was it just, for you, just something you thought was great, but, one of the other great things that you've been doing at the time?
Yeah, that was it. I just knew I had to produce it. As I said, I've been paid, so I had to do it. And when you get it in your mind, it's the funniest part about it. I can always hear the finished thing in my mind. That's why when Tom was doing the arrangements, I had to sit with him and sing them, which is so frustrating. But Tom Merriman is one of the greatest arrangers of all time. He was older than me, but during the war, when he was the American bandmaster and he used to create all these bands, he created the Glenn Miller sound. He created all those big band sounds, because when all these band, they'd put down their instrument and go and fight for Uncle Sam. But they started forming these bands, which they send all over the world. So Tom had to do the arrangements with whatever musicians he had. And that's how the sound of some of these big bands came up. He used to do all the arrangements for Satchmo, I See Trees of Green, Skies of Blue and all that sort of thing. He did all those arrangements and never told me until later on in life. I met lots of famous people in my bit that all knew Tom Merriman in Dallas. And the reason he didn't become so like a well-known figure is because he loved Dallas and couldn't be bothered to go to LA and write film scores and that. But more than capable of doing that, Some of his string arrangements he did for choirs are quite unbelievable. But I said to Tom one day, because I'd written a lot of jingles with Tom and I was really fussy about it. And I said to Tom, who I think was a genius, and I said to him, you know, do don't you ever get fed up with me coming in with these little bits of tunes and then singing them to you? And you've got, and I said, no, I don't want that. I want this. I said, don't you ever get fed up with it, Tom? And he said, no, no, no. He said, Muff. And so I think, oh, you know, this man's a genius. And he's praising me. He said, you come up with these little phrases. He said, which are unique. He said, and sometimes you sing a 5-4 bar and a 4-4 bar. You use a strange chord. He said, I know every chord and more. He said, but yours is unique because you sing and don't play anything. You're not limited. I'm feeling pretty good now, you know. This genius is telling me he loves my stuff. He said, but the most important thing of all, Mark, and excuse my French tie, he said, you pay me a lot of money. So being feeling great, I really plummeted to the floor, you know.
Something comes to mind for the three of us when we're thinking about how the creative process is and writing music and the amazing stuff that you've been doing. Now, to do all sort of kind of the bed music, I think you call it, for some of the events that you've never, ever even seen. How did that come about?
I need the brief. I need a pretty precise brief. It's like, do you remember that opening part? I don't think, whether you heard it, guys, you know, where the dancers came on and the gladiators came on.
Yeah.
The brief I had for that, he said to me, he said, right, well, I want, this was Kenny. What I want you to write, Muff, he said, I want you to do a cross between the gladiators and 76 trombones. If you think of it, and think of it like that, especially the second part where that drum comes in, that's what that was. But even that, you know, when you used to hear it and see the dancers and the gladiators coming on stage as the introduction and hear that big thumping PA, I used to sort of sit there and think, God, I do love that. I do love that.
Yeah.
It just looks so great. And it'll be sad if the new show doesn't use that, because it just kicks the show off and gets the audience.
Honestly, Muff, like you talking about that particular track, and I know that I've spoken to you about it many times because it was a track that was never fully used on TV. So it was just, you were at the NIA and you saw the G-Force cheerleaders come in, like literally the hairs on my arms would just stand up because I just, yeah, it was amazing. And like you said, it just set the entire tone for the whole performance, and just with the cheerleaders and the lights, it was just absolutely perfect.
It was, you know, the arrangements and the production were just superb, you know. It's quite funny because I went out for lunch with John K. Cooper the other day, and we were sort of talking about, obviously, about the gladiators and how it happened and everything else as well. And he said, my worry is that London Weekend Television had a lot of money. He said, the BBC don't have so much money and have to justify all their expenditure. And he said, and I worry in case they do it a bit like that other version that was done on Sky, the guy that used to work for me did. And he said, if they do that, he said that was comedy. He said, the gladiators isn't. Gladiators is a challenge. And as you remember, Di, because you got injured, you know, they were really going for it, you know. And at the back, there was always two ambulances and three doctors ready for any accident. And they did happen. You know, people got injured. he felt that unless they do it the same sort of way, it won't have the same impact. It'll be one little sort of series and then gone, you know? It's got to be done right.
And Muff, with some of the event music, so what was the process really, or how did you feel when, I don't know, the music for Powerball was changed to a totally different version? Did this happen once you'd kind of seen Powerball in action, once you'd seen it for the first time and you thought, actually, okay, this needs to change slightly?
Tempo wasn't quite right. And the other thing, I wish I could have been there, because with them, I wrote a lot of sound effects. Well, you don't write sound effects. I produced a lot of sound effects. When on the editing system, I would have put those sound effects in. You know, like I made a sound effect of those big iron balls crashing together, which I had when I'd seen it. And a lot of the other, you know, where they had sort of balls swinging across it, all the other games, where it was an impact, I wanted to be there and add those sound effects. And I think it would just added a little bit more to it. How far do you go? That's, you know, and I wasn't in charge then. I was just in charge of the VIP and taking Ulrika home at night. You know, that was my job, right?
Oh, I bet that was hard. She's so much
fun. Ulrika was the star then, but she was bitching and moaning at Kenny about the fact that she didn't want to walk back to the hotel at night, which was only, half a mile of that. So I said to Ulrika, I'll tell you what, Ulrika, I'll take you home every night if you come and open my, once again, do what the Glads are doing, come and open my school fete. So she said, okay. And because she was more terrible, I paid her more. I paid her a third. So I took her home the first night to the hotel, because she wasn't that well known. Anyway, there was this big banker on the door, and we got to the door and said, oh, you know, and people from Gladiators were queuing up at the doors. And this guy said to me, you can come in, sir, but I'm afraid your lady can't. And I said, no, we're from London Weekend Television. And he said, no, sir, you can come in, but I'm afraid your lady can't. I said, this is Ulrika from London Weekend Television. And he said, listen, I think you ought to go and get the manager. He said, well, I'll go and get him, sir, by all means. He said, but he'll have the same. Anyway, the manager came over. By now, Ulrika was freaking out, because they obviously thought that she was my lady of the night. So the manager comes over and says, I said, listen, this is Ulrika Johnson from the Gladiators, and I'm Muff Merchant. He didn't know me from Adam, but I was a man, so, you know, he's prepared to sort of take my word for it. He lets us both in, and this guy is, you know, this big bankster is sort of getting a little bit shirty.
You must have formed a really good relationship with Kenny and Nigel, though, once that ice had been broken.
I did. Well, the other big thing, of course, is that I came up with the idea of, what was the first talent show that they did? I can't remember what it was now. What was it? And I think it's still running in America. Pop Idol. I came up with the idea, because I've got a recording studio. Kenny, Nigel and I, over lunch, I came up with the idea of Pop Idol and went through it all with them and did it all. When Gladiators finished, Kenny and I were going to do another show in either Abu Dhabi or somewhere like that, where they had this big hotel where they had three big swimming pools. And we were, Yamaha just invented a scooter that went under the water. So we were going to do basically Gladiators on and under the water. And we were going to fly various cities in, because they had an airline, from all across the country, and city would compete against City. Well, at the, you know, they bring the, so say Birmingham would bring a whole couple hundred people in a plane load, and they'd all come in and they would go up against the underwater gladiators. But what had happened was Nigel had been given the job of Pop Idol. You know, it hadn't gone quite right, and he asked Kenny, would he come and do it? So Kenny phoned me up and said, you know, don't watch the television, but I'm going to go and join Nigel because he's offered me an awful lot of money. And I couldn't compete with what he'd been offered at the time, you know. And that was it. So, of course, I was always bitter and twisted about it, you know, because we'd come up with the idea and they'd sort of left me in the lurch, so to speak, to go away and do it. And then, of course, you know, the rest is history. It's quite incredible.
And talking of music, Muff, with Gladiators as well, there was three soundtrack albums that you released over the years. There was one in 1992, and this album was the one that reached number 11 in the UK compilation charts. And actually, I think it achieved gold status, and that's like over 100,000. And that featured like all of the Gladiators theme tune, all the event musics, and like rock classic songs from the likes of Queen, Free, Meatloaf, etc. I remember I had it on cassette when I was younger. I've got it on CD now as well, but I literally used to play it and play it and play it. And the event music for me was just as important as those classic rock songs. It was like the perfect balance, and it had the perfect kind of, I suppose, musicality and feel for what Gladiators kind of was and kind of how it showed on air. Were you surprised with how well that album sold and the fact that it went to kind of gold status?
Yeah, I was. I was very surprised. You know, I didn't get an advance for the record, because I didn't think it would go anywhere.
And then that was followed up in 1993 with the return of the Gladiators, which was had all of the new event music that came across from series 2 and like a new selection of rock songs, and that one also reached number 20 in the UK compilation chart as well. So not as successful as the first one, but still nothing to kind of moan about there with kind of a follow-up track. And then again in 1998 you released Gladiators 98, which was a compilation of the remixed music, so you kind of revisited all of those classic songs that you'd created for Gladiators and kind of gave them more of a futuristic electronic sound, and there was a new version of the theme tune that was more contemporary. What did you think of that album?
It was made just to sell at the shows. That's all. It didn't get a release through anybody at all. I'd paid for and pressed them all off. And in all fairness, Paul Farrer did most of the tracks on there, you know, because he was working with me at the time in the studio. You know, that's the way I did that. But it was just built to sell at the shows.
I mean, I know that the fans, the music is one of the key talking points. I know that Gladiators was an action show, but the fact that the fans are so passionate about all of the music tracks and all of the albums and wanting to kind of collect the full kind of set of event music is something that's kind of very popular with them. And like say the amount of people that I read online that would love to kind of explore the archives of the event music is unbelievable. And there's also such a demand as well for online streaming, and I know that the fans would love to know if the Gladiators tracks would ever be available as for download or on streaming services like Spotify. Is that something that could potentially happen?
Well, Paul, you reach a stage in life when you think that, you know, what am I going to do with this, with all my music? My kids tell me that when I die, they'll just get a big skip and throw it all in. I know, it's terrible. I have kept all the Gladiators, because we've all done on 24 tracks, and I've kept all those, but I have digitized it all and put it on big hard drive. I would be quite happy if I could find someone to do the work like you, to come up to my studios and listen. I, you know, behind me, I've been going through it. I've got it all on DAT, and I've got a DAT machine playing it all. And, you know, because I did so much that no one's ever heard. You know, there is, believe it or not, a version I did with Irish Dancing, right? Which I did, and said to Kenny, he said, oh, we could probably use that. one night in the live show. So, you know, I've got so much, and it would be a shame that people that really, you know, really like the Gladiators don't get chance to hear it. So I think what you ought to do is make a little note before I get too much older. Come up here and go through it all.
I'm there.
Wow. Me too.
Because I kept getting little ideas, and I wrote the international theme, you know, which was a rip-off of a bit of classical music, which I won't tell you. They said, oh, do you think we ought to change the theme tune? I said, well, I'll write. So I've written a couple of more openers for it, which I don't think anybody's heard. So, yeah, there must be a couple of hours of music that could be gone through and just stuck out there for people to just play with, you know, because it's not going to make any money for me, but it's just so that you really said, okay. I was always a little bit precious about my jingles, because I had a sort of a minor hit record back before all this happened, and I used, to get the effect of the voice, I sang on it, and I only did backing vocals on all the Gladiator stuff, but I sang lead on this track called The Ultimate Warlord, which is available on, you know, round over places. And this Dutch band couldn't get the sound, which I did with one of these tubes on a guitar, because they couldn't make the sound. They actually just ripped it straight off and put it on their record and released it. And the record got quite high in the Dutch charts. And I thought, oh, I never got a penny for that. Right, lot. So I got a little bit precious of it. And my jingles used to get everywhere. And that's why I'm known as Ed Johns, which is two of my middle names instead of Muff Murphy, because I get so many emails asking for jingles. I could spend a full-time job just copying jingles for people. But what they were doing, they were using little tiny race, you know, the little, even more so now, using and getting singers to sing over the top of them so they just use it. But I don't care anymore. I've got to the stage where they're not going to make me any money, so why be precious about it? If they want to use it and it gives them satisfaction, puts a smile on their face, great. And that's the way I feel about it now. So you're welcome.
Well, Muff, we'll definitely have to talk after this about me coming, go through all of that music and then kind of make it available for people, because, yeah, I mean, people listen to it when they go into the gym and they're working out, and it kind of, like you say, it just gives them that feel of playing the events. I know I used to kind of put it on in my headphones on my cassette tape and swing around in the park imagining that I was kind of doing Hang Tough and things like that. So yeah, I'll be there.
You would have loved what I did one night when I think my son did it with me. When everybody had gone, and Di would remember this, we all went to a room which they used to call hostilities instead of hospitality. The all set up, right? Because what they did, we found the biggest problem with changing the sets. It took too long. And I wrote the Gladiator Stomp and other songs that could be used when things didn't quite go according to plan. It took longer to set it up.
The Gladiator Stomp.
So what they would do, the game they finished on would be left up ready for the game the next time. But they left up the eliminator on, and I went around the eliminator. The travelator wasn't working, right? but I did the Eliminator. So,
oh, wow.
I was a lot fitter then, but I tell you what, I never bought, you know.
That's amazing, because not a lot of people were allowed to do that Eliminator course. No, not even the Gladiators.
I got away with murder with things, you know, because I used to have all the seats to give away. If the Gladiators and all the, you know, the technicians and everybody wanted tickets, Muff Murphy had, because we used to give them away at my radio station. We had this, I've still got a bus. We had a bus at the radio station in Coventry, and we would announce on the radio that we were giving away the tickets, because that was the only way we could get rid of them. Because we had, like, you know, 17,000 or something we could get away with, how many it was. So we had this bus, and so we would announce on the radio, if you go to look out for the Kicks bus, it was called Kicks 96 at the stage. Look out for the Kicks bus, you get a free ticket to Gladiators. Round Coventry, I don't know if you've ever been there, there's a ring road, and we jammed up the ring road with the bus and all the traffic following the bus. It was that popular, and we got told off by the police and and everything, you know. Yeah, so giving away the tickets was, so I was powerful. I could give away, if you wanted a dozen tickets for your family, see Muff Murphy. So,
oh, Muff, I wish I'd known you back then, because I used to have to apply and send it all to my friends and family just to try and to get that through, to get into the arena. There was one thing that I wanted to touch on after, obviously, like with the three albums, which, like I say, I was a massive fan of, as were a lot of the Gladiator fans, but there was also five Gladiator singles that were released, and I'm not sure if you were kind of involved with all of them. I know that you'd had an involvement with some of them, but there was the Gladiators
one. I had involved with the first one, which was the theme.
Okay, yeah, there was the Gladiators main theme that was released in November and reached number 80 on the charts, and it stayed in the charts for 4 weeks. And then there was a We've Got the Power by Sonia. I didn't know if you had any involvement in, understood why, where Sonia kind of suddenly came from with Gladiator's music. Then there was one that I think you had a connection with, because there was a kind of a double A-side with Wolf and the Trogs. You make my heart safe. And Shadow and Edwin Starr. And I know that you've had some involvement in your career with Edwin Starr. I didn't know if it was you that put the two together.
I had a bit. Edwin Starr was my jingle singer. Can you believe that? Edwin Starr lived in the Midlands. So if I wanted, I did a package for a Soul Station in London. I'll think of it in a minute. And Edwin Starr came and sang on it for me. And it was like great friends, you know. And it was such a shame when he died. But yeah, Edwin was really, you know, he used to turn up in a very flash car. And I used to pay him cash, but not much, you know, like I'd probably give him a couple of £100 for singing all the jingles for a day's work, you know, singing. But he loved doing it. I love singing this, you know. And so I got quite a few famous people sing jingles that, you know, were always available that said they would do it just for the sheer fun of doing it. And Evan Starr was one of them. He was fantastic.
He did a duet with Shadow for the song. Yep. And then there was also Hunter, who did a debut single called Shaka Boom, Ruby Turner. Shaka Boom! And finally, the Boys Are Back in Town, the cover of Thin Lizzy track, was performed by all of the Gladiators team as well.
What used to happen, they would, I had a studio in Birmingham at the time as well. And what John Kenny would do, he said, oh, Muffy, he said, how about, can you do See You Later, Gladiator? All right. So I'd go back, you know, and I'd been brought up doing cover versions anyway. So because London Weekend Television couldn't use the originals, I used to do cover versions, Another One Bites the Dust and all those sort of things. Always slightly different, but pretty good copies. And The Boys Are Back in Town was, you know, that was the opening bit for when the actual male gladiators came on stage. I don't know if you remember. So I did those and things like Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf? Have you heard that? You know, so I did all those funny little things, you know. I I remember singing, because I could sing falsetto, doing girl parts and changing the speed and that to get the effect, you know. But they had to be done overnight at times. I had like sort of like 24 hours notice, you know. They really pushed it at times, you know. But yeah, I know. So the first one is the only one that I remember. And I'm pleased that Sonia Fell was good enough to cover. That was great, you know.
I didn't know where the connection came from with Gladiators, thinking, oh yeah, let's hook up with Sonia, and equally for Sonia to think, hey, I'm going to hook up with the Gladiators. But yeah, it was quite a good track as well.
Muff, I've got a question. You know, our individual themes like Snap, I've Got the Power, was that... Yeah. Your choice, or did you sit with Nigel and Penny, and did you all kind of have a powwow over each individual Gladiators theme tune?
Well, they sort of came up with it, and I, you know, those that I could cover, I did, and then those that I didn't cover, we pretended I had covered. So I just changed them around a bit, you know. But yeah, but most of them I did, you know.
Wow.
But we are family. You know, you would have died laughing if you'd seen me in the studio going, that's right.
And Muff, that takes me quite nicely onto another album that is Gladiators related, but not as much as what we've been discussing, which is Diane's debut album, No Covers, and the single, I Don't Know. I mean, Di, over to you guys. I want to know how this came about, whose idea it was, Nigel. What did Muff think of the album?
Yes, it was Nigel's idea.
Nigel.
Di, I've still got all those tapes. And now, you know, because there were little bits where you were slightly out of tune, I can now go through those. I'd like to go through those with your permission to do those, because I think I could make a much better job of them.
Fantastic. With today's technology, I can sing a lot better now. Not that I actually indulge that much.
You were thrown into a studio and expected to behave like a blooming pop star, which is... very cruel. They wouldn't let me produce it either. The record company said, no, we got these two guys. And I look at it, you know, and I thought if I could play with those again and do different things, I think I might, well, I finally retired. I think I'll make that my job.
Bless you. I actually wrote, I don't know, I wrote it in about 5 minutes.
You did.
And I was quite... proud of that to this day, but you know, and I had had a musical theatre, sort of singing, dance, and acting training in my background. It didn't qualify me to become someone to do an album for Nigel. Do you know what? What an experience, eh?
Well, exactly. Exactly.
And it's another album that we need on the streaming platforms as well.
That's right.
I'm so going to pick you in the ribs when I see you.
Muff, who was your favourite Gladiator, present company excluded?
Thank you.
I was, because she stayed with us. And I can remember, you know, one of the most lovely moments was my daughter, because you played, was it the clarinet, Di, or the flute?
The flute, yeah.
You played the flute. My daughter was learning to play the clarinet, and you played together. You know, my daughter was, we did lovely things together that, you know, naturally. Together. So yeah, so Di was my favourite. I got to tell you this as well, Di, you've just seen Greg. Well, Greg at the time was about 13, 14, 15, I can't remember now, at the local school. And obviously the teachers would come to Greg to get tickets as well. And obviously you used a shared bathroom at our house, because that's what we had.
Where are we going with this, Muff?
Very, very, and one of the teachers said to Greg, do you know anybody? And Greg said, yeah, he said, one of them's staying with us, Jet, stay with us. What? God, she's my fantasy. Oh my God. Yes, sir. She was coming out of the bathroom in just a towel this morning. I saw her. You know, because the teacher. Greg said it was so funny to watch him do that.
Oh, it's <England.
laughs> Yeah, I got to know Di so well, and I think, you know, Di's got to be my favourite, you know, because it was just so many other. We had a lot of the natural fun together as well.
Yes.
And what about the event music? What was your favourite? Which of those event music do you think suited the actual event best?
I got to think it was that opening theme that we used to play, Where the Girls All Dance. I think that became my favourite bit, I think, as well. Because it was so, you know, Nigel and Kenny. You know, Kenny, there was a girl there, the leader of the dancers, who was the choreographer.
Donna Darby.
Donna, correct. That's right. Thanks ever so much for the tip. And it was great. And that, and I just felt that opening sequence was so superb. It just, it set the whole mood for all the other games. Yeah, I think that's my favourite bit, actually.
I don't know what you're up to now and what you're looking forward to.
We sold our radio station, but unfortunately the company that bought it only paid us, we agreed to pay it over, you know, sell over 3 years. Well, they went bust after the first year, and because they employed a lot of our friends that we got to know, you know, the people that worked for us for years, and we were very loyal, so we took it back over again. But it was, you know, so Ginny has got to be the oldest MD, and I run two other stations. I run one in Birmingham, which is I've just bought the name BR&B, which I own, and I run one in Worcester.
Wow.
Called Wyvern. So I run two stations, but we also own the digital platform for Herefordshire, Worcestershire and Gloucestershire, so our radio stations are on that as well. But we've got to slow down. I'm also chairman of South Aston Community Association, which is 2 acres in the middle of Aston, which I run. I am also chairman of all the theatres in Worcester, which is another charity, but I'm also president of the children's charity in Coventry, and I've been doing that, and I was doing that, just started into the committee with the Gladiators, and we've raised about $3.5 million over the years. So I'm still doing that. But I've said to myself, at the end of this year, I'm going to slow down.
Right. Never.
So yeah, still busy, as well as still doing music, you know, still writing jingles and things like that, but not as much.
Undoubtedly, as Paul and I have said on the GladPod over the past, you know, couple of series, that your music was like the perfect complement to the show as a whole. Do you think that the Gladiators theme tune is one of the best TV theme tunes of all time?
I've got to realise it is good, you know, and I do get a kick. Without trying to sound conceited, I do get a kick out of it when I'm sat on my own listening to it. The way it turned out, and a lot of it was down to the arrangements, which took a long time to do. I do like it, and I must confess, listening to a lot of the old tracks that no one's ever heard, I do enjoy listening to it. So it must say something, I suppose, really. It still sounds to me, even though it's 30 years old, some of it, you know, it still sounds quite modern to me, you know?
I totally agree. I think that the music would still very much work against the modern visuals of a modernized version of Gladiators, and it would still sync up extremely well.
And Marf, if we could give you the opportunity to press a button and go back to the early 90s, you know, before you had that kind of moment on the plane to Dallas of writing it down and putting it all together, would you go back and do it all over again? Would you do anything differently?
No, I wouldn't. The music, no, I wouldn't do it different. No, I wouldn't. There's little probably melodies that I might change a bit, but on the whole, you know, no, I still listen to it thinking, I would have had a job to do better than that.
Muff, I love that. Thank you so much for joining us on the GladPod and taking a step back. And what I'm looking forward to now is what's to come once Paul comes over to you. The thing is, once Paul comes over, he's going to take up every little thing that he can that's Glad related.
Well, what I'm going to do, Paul, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play you a whole load of stuff. I'll try and do some more stuff and send you. And I'm going to leave you with my engineer so that you can say, right, this is what I don't want to interfere, right? And I feel it's something that you'd love to do, and I will make sure that you, because my young engineer now has been working with me quite a few years, knows the way I think. You know, I can leave him to set it, you know, the drum sounds I like and the guitar sounds I like, etc., and the bass guitar and everything. You'll love working with him.
Amazing. Honestly, I will be in my element. The 10-year-old inside of me is just like screaming right now. So yeah, thank you so much for that.
It'll be a pleasure.
Muff, thank you so much for joining us in GladPod.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great. The memories have been great coming back, you know?
Well, there we go. Muff Murfin on GladPod. It's someone, Di, that I know you've been wanting to get on the GladPod for, well, pretty much since we started. What a great chat he was.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a personal connection with him and his lovely wife and his family. And he just is a gift, literally. Isn't it? It's very kind of cheesy to say the gift that just keeps on giving. What a beautiful soul and a massively talented man. I'm so glad he's part of the Glad family.
I mean, he's pretty much a genius, isn't he, to be fair?
Yes.
The fact that he wrote one of the most iconic theme tunes of the 90s, if not the most iconic theme tune, in 2 hours while on a flight to Dallas. I mean, I never knew that story before.
Yeah, and I think for me as well, I'm not particularly... I have no musical talent whatsoever. So I just wanted to find a bit more about the processes. And actually, I think what I've discovered is he didn't have a eureka moment. There wasn't something that just popped into his head and he was like, right, that's going to be it. It was just part of his job. He got paid to do it. And I created something. Then equally, he does sort of admit, he did admit on the actual Gladpod itself that, yeah, he did realise it was something quite special as well.
Yeah, I think even just getting the whole work, like the way that Gladiators is said, like Gladiators, like that seemed to have been the hook for him to then create the whole rest of the song and then to carry that through, like he said, to all of the event music. And then his favourite track, which was the introduction to the whole show in the arena, which if anybody has seen Gladiators live at the National Indoor Arena or Wembley or Sheffield, we'll probably remember that track because I could never understand why it was never shown on TV, because it was an amazing performance by the G-Force cheerleaders. It was amazing lighting because each of the different sections of the song is kind of take you on a bit of a journey with how that would change. But honestly, literally, when I think about it, the hairs on my arms do stand up, and I know that so many GLAD fans are out there wanting to hear that piece of music again. And when I was younger, I used to sneak in a cassette player to try and record it. I don't know what I was thinking with the arena of 7,000 other fans of just trying to capture that music and not hear anybody else around me. But I tried my best to get hold of it back then, but wasn't quite successful.
As you talk, my hairs on my arms have just I completely agree with you.
And I was going to ask you, Di, as well, just you've spoken a lot previously about how Gladiators looked visually and the work that went in there, but Muff's music and, you know, everything that complemented each of the events and the show as a whole, that played a huge part in the success of Gladiators as well.
Absolutely. I think music is so evocative. It kind of reaches parts of our neurology, saying the psychotherapist here, but it reaches parts of us that, you know, throughout the whole of our lives, you know, people relate to music and the memories that music evokes from those periods of a person's life. And, you know, we're talking about something so iconic here, 30 years on, and it's about to kind of do another kind of rendition of itself. And there'll be a whole other generation ahead of relating to the incredible sounds of the likes of Muff Murphy.
The next thing that I'm going to be doing is arranging my visit to the Old Smithy recording studios with Muff, because I never imagined having an invite like that. And let's get this music digitized and get it on streaming platforms and get everybody listening to it again, because like Di said, it does transport you straight back to a particular time in your life, and I think it's just amazing. So if I can bring that to the world for all of the GLAD fans, then that would be absolutely epic.
How would it work in your mind? Would you want to have it so that it took you on a gladiatorial journey as you were listening to it?
I think you could kind of like the albums, I suppose, that Muff created back in the day, the three albums, how they were kind of categorized and ordered, and you could do it through, like, as the events were like introduced and then fading into each other. So it would be like an amazing journey. And I've heard so many fans come to me and say, oh, I listen to the Duel music while I'm on the treadmill, or I listen to Hang Tough when I'm like going for a run and stuff like that. And it does bring the adrenaline out in you, which is, I think, what Muff really captured with all of his event music, is whatever was going on the screen, even though he obviously envisaged it before even seeing anything. Like I mentioned on the podcast itself, the wall, when the music would change, when the Gladiators were released, and then it became not just a climbing game, it became a chase game. And that's just genius, I think, to kind of really get the adrenaline pumping in the people that are watching it, not only the people that are kind of taking part.
Now, there was mention of some Irish event music, did he say as well?
The Irish, was it an Irish jig or something?
Yeah, and then for the rest of the podcast, all I had was the Gladiators theme tune, but sung with someone with an Irish accent.
Even trying to think of where that could have even been placed in the show at any point.
If you think you can do the Gladiators theme tune in an Irish accent, get in touch. You can get in touch with us by emailing gladpod@gladiatorstv.com or sliding into our DMs on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Gladpod, and we'll see you next time.
Good competition, good spirit, great sportsmanship, as both contenders show mutual respect. Join us again next week for the ultimate challenge, the might of...